Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
I'm Manoush Marodi, sitting in for Brian Lehrer on WNYC. And we public radio listeners, we've been hearing a lot about women or the lack of women at the top of companies, big Fortune 500 corporations. Last week was Equal Pay Day, a day to raise awareness of the gap between men's and women's paychecks. And everyone knows what you mean when you say you're leaning in, right? Well, my next two guests are joining the discussion with their new book, The Confidence Code, The Science and Art of Self-Assurance, What Women Should Know. Claire Shipman and Kati Kay, welcome to WNYC.
Hi, Manoush.
Thank you.
Hi, ladies. So the premise of your book is that women don't show enough confidence, and so they are passed up for jobs. They have a harder time succeeding because they don't let people know, or they don't even think that they're capable, right?
Yeah, I think that's the key. It's not that women don't show enough confidence. It's that they don't feel enough confidence. You know all the data out there on women's doing so well in education. Women are getting more degrees than men. They are getting more postgraduate degrees. They're getting more PhDs than men. But then they get into the workplace, and somehow their confidence fails them. We wrote this book because we interviewed women who you'd think would be brimming with self-assurance, who would tell us, you know what, I was just lucky, or I was in the right place at the right time, or I'm not sure I was the ideal candidate for that next promotion level, and so I didn't go for it. And those anecdotes that we heard when we started doing the research into the data is extraordinary. That Hewlett-Packard has just done a study which has been replicated elsewhere, that women will apply for a promotion if they have 100% of the skill set required. Men are happy to go for it at 60% of the skill set because they assume they're going to learn the rest on the job. Columbia University just came up with similar studies. Men overestimate their abilities by, on average, 30%. And the trouble is that women in this lack of confidence, we're holding ourselves back from opportunities that are out there for us.
So, Claire, I want to ask you, you're senior national correspondent at Good Morning America. You obviously like to attack things by interviewing people. Is that how this book came about, that you and Kati sort of had a premise, like, wait a minute, why are women not as confident, and then went and gathered sort of data and information and statistics to present your case?
Well, exactly, Manoush. It's funny, we had felt this ourselves. We thought anecdotally, we've certainly heard women talk about this notion of, I feel like a fraud, I feel like an imposter. We were struck when we wrote our last book by how many incredibly successful women we talked with who would say that sort of thing to us, not only directly, but talk about not feeling that maybe they deserved a promotion, or constantly, again, saying they were just lucky to be someplace. And we decided to look at the data because, of course, as you know, I mean, as a reporter, you just want to shake it out. And we were surprised to find a lot of the data that, for example, Kati just mentioned, the Hewlett-Packard stuff. I think there was one breakthrough moment for us when we knew, all right, this gap is real, and it really is about confidence. We came across the work of Zach Estes, a researcher who tested spatial ability in men and women. And that's an area where men typically are thought to have an edge. Often in IQ tests, you'll see that that's where men score more highly, women score higher on the verbal skills. And what he found was, in looking at the results, sure enough, the men were scoring better. But he started to look at why, and he noticed that the women often just were not answering the questions. And when he told everybody, we redid the test, that everyone has to answer all the questions, no matter what, whatever you think you're going to do, the scores were almost identical. And then he went back and said, all right, answer all the questions, and after each question, note how confident you are in your answer, women's scores fell again. So there's just something about having to be confident that really is, that has an impact on our performance.
So, listeners, I want to hear from the men out there. Mm-hmm. What do you think of Kati and Claire's premise that women underestimate their abilities? Are you more confident at work than your coworkers? Are you confident enough to take paternity leave, for example, these days? Call in at 212-433-WNYC. That's 212-433-9692. So, Kati, you have this very interesting anecdote that you talk about a professor at Berkeley who did some research in overconfidence versus competence in your book. Can you sort of tell that test that he gave his students?
Yeah, that was so interesting. This is Cameron Anderson's work. He's a professor in the business school out there. He's worked in psychology and in business. And he wanted to test whether what the correlation was between confidence and competence. And he got all his students together, and at the beginning of the year, he gave them a historical quiz. And in that historical quiz, there are a certain number of fake results. So there was a Queen Shaddock made an appearance, and Murphy's Last Ride, things that had never actually existed. And the people that ticked those answers and said they knew what they were, he assumed were the most confident people. At the end of that semester, he did a survey of the group, and the people who had been the most confident had the most status in the group. They were the ones whose ideas were kicked up to the next level. They were the ones who were most respected. They turned out to be the thought leaders in that group. And his conclusion was that confidence matters as much to success, if not more, than competence. And I think for women, Manoush, this is just a kind of crazy idea. You know, for years we've put our heads down and worked hard and thought if we played by the rules, our natural talents would be rewarded. And then we've looked around as the guys around us have got promoted over us and pay rises above ours. And I think it's because we're missing something. And when Claire and I first came across this study, we were so depressed by it. We thought, oh, my God, we didn't even want to put it in the book because we thought, how can this possibly be true? We're all
and
about
Katty
competence.
Had done the original interview, yeah, and I kept saying to Katty, no, this must be wrong. He cannot have said that confidence can matter more than competence. That can't be right.
You weren't confident that Katty had gotten it right. Basically. But see, here's what I wonder. Is this a cultural thing? Is lack of confidence perceived as a weakness in the United States? Is it different maybe in other cultures? Would this sort of, you know, sort of a bit of bluster, that's what we're talking about, would this not go over well in other countries? You know, Katty, I knew you from back in the day at the BBC, and frankly, acting like that didn't win you a lot of friends.
But you know what? I think actually acting with bluster doesn't really earn women in particular a lot of friends wherever we are. I mean, you know this, Manoush, from years of working with men and women in television where there is a kind of bravado among the guys.
That's for sure.
And I think that for women, we've tried it, and all of the data out there shows that that doesn't work, that women get penalized both socially and professionally when we act like men do, when we talk as much as men do, when we are as assertive as men do. We get penalized for it. And what we kind of really wrestled with this idea of, does that mean basically that you have to be a jerk to be confident? And we spoke to Christine Lagarde, who's probably one of the most confident women we interviewed. And she
head
said,
of the IMF, right?
The head of the IMF. And she said it's about being authentic, that actually women shouldn't try to be like men. We can't try. It doesn't work for us. We're not very good at it. But that doesn't mean that we should hold ourselves back. That study that Claire talked about Zach Estes, we should be answering those questions. We can be consensual. We can listen to other people's opinions. We can be warm and mentoring and nurturing. But we can't let that hold ourselves from, you know, answering the questions in meetings, sitting at the table, going for the promotions.
Okay, so listeners, Katty, Claire, I am proud to announce that we have a board full of calls from men. Which, great news. Let's go to David in Astoria. Hi, David.
Hi. I heard the question about men taking paternity leave and whether, you know, we have the confidence to call it that. And I you probably have some noise in the background because I'm home with my nearly 4-year-old daughter, and we have another one on the way, first week of June. And I'm a freelancer, and this time around, I really have tried to make a boundary that this summer, when my wife will be on maternity leave, is when I'm on paternity leave, and I've been trying to call it that to encourage men to be more confident in using that definition, and using that term. I think that maybe coming from, and I don't know how this speaks to the larger conversation, but maybe coming from a freelance background, I've already had years of practice in having boundaries about how my time is used and what my definition is. You know, it's kind of different day to day, that it made me very ready, I think, for being the one primarily home with our daughter, because, you know, when you're a freelancer, you have to fight for the value of every hour of your time day to day anyway.
That's a really good point. Congratulations, David. So are you starting to see that men also need to build confidence, but maybe in other things, Claire and Katty?
It's interesting because we've had so many men say to us, look, we're not confident all the time either, and we, you know, what about us? And certainly, of course, men can be filled with self-doubt. Of course, there are challenges. I mean, what David is doing is really extraordinary, because there is evidence that men, they do feel that it's harder to, for example, ask for flexibility in the workplace than it can be for women. But we've also had a lot of men say to us, wow, we recognize this in our wives and our girlfriends and our daughters. They're so competent. They're so good. And then they ruminate and they stew and they worry and tell us what this is. And so we think we've hit a chord here. And one thing I just wanted to mention for David, because I'd be curious, because he seems so brave, is Kathy and I crafted, together with the help of some academics, a quiz, an assessment, actually, on confidence. And these psychologists were great in helping us put it together. It's on our website, on confidencecode.com, and we have had more than 20,000 people take it this week since we started talking about it. And it's fantastic, because it's helping us build a real database on gender and confidence and income level and confidence and background level and confidence, and really start to study this issue.
Okay, I'm Manoush Zomorodi. We're talking about women and confidence, and you're listening to WNYC FM HD and AM New York, WNJT FM 88.1 Trenton, WNJO 90.3 Toms River, WNJY 89.3 Netcong, and WNJP 88.5 Sussex. And I'm dying to go to Bob in Rego Park. And Bob, you have a question about parenting styles.
Yeah, it seems to me, I'm a yoga teacher, and I think intuitively, it seems to me that the lack of confidence in women perhaps would come from the raising of children, that mothers and fathers are consciously or unconsciously not giving the same confidence they give to their sons to their daughters. And this will never change unless the parents realize that they have to teach confidence from birth. Do the two women agree with my statement?
That's really interesting. And as the parent of a boy and a girl, I enjoy dabbling in pop psychology as to how to make my girl feel more secure. And I've noticed that she doesn't want to take these fun quizzes that I used to do with my son, who felt very confident about doing them. You're both parents, Kathy and Claire, and you both have boys and girls in your families. Do you see a difference there?
I think I do see a difference. And actually writing this book has made me much more aware of the difference. And I think it's not just parenting. I think it's in school, too, that of course, girls today, it's different from when I was growing up. Girls are taught they can be everything, and they are doing super well in school. They are the stars academically. But there is also a tendency to put a pressure on our girls to be good, to be perfect, to draw within the lines, to be the child that the teacher can rely on only to raise their hand when they have the answer ready, to not be the rough and tumble kid in the classroom and go yelling around the playground. That's still not seen as what girls do. And the trouble is that some of this being good and being perfect stops girls from taking risks. It makes girls less able to handle risk and failure. And, of course, if you want to try something new, if you want to go for something that's just outside of your reach, you have to be prepared to fail. And I think one thing that we as parents can do is be okay with and, indeed, encourage our daughters failing. Some of it, I think, comes still from competitive sports. Girls are still not doing as much competitive sports as boys. They're dropping out at faster rates than boys do. And it's on the sports field that you learn the kind of the rough and tumble of life, that you learn to have the wins, but you also learn that when you have a loss, you have to shake it off again and get back in for the next match.
Okay, let's go to JP in Brooklyn. Hi, JP. Hi, JP. Can you hear us? JP, are you there?
Yes, are you?
Yeah,
can you hear me?
We hear you. Go ahead.
All right, I was going to say, I think it's fundamentally biological, because I don't really think it's a difference between men and women in confidence, competence, or ability. It's the fact that men with a body loaded full of testosterone have no patience for ambiguity, and we just want to dive in and make snap judgments. That's what it does to us. And what comes off looking as competence, I mean, the male ego is totally fragile, but we make snap judgments in any situation and ride with them. And people see that as confidence and recognize it as confidence, and that's what puts men in this position over women in a lot of situations.
I want to bring in Mustafa from Somerset, New Jersey, who I think has a similar sort of comment. Mustafa, go ahead.
Yeah, I think women are more security-oriented due to the protecting the home, and men is more risk-taking-oriented. And maybe this is something we need to acknowledge. And if women were in charge of Wall Street, for example, maybe the market wouldn't crash. They would be more security-oriented.
That's for sure. So that's the question here. Is it, you know, it's a little indelicate to ask, but is it biology?
You know, it's not indelicate. I think J.P. and Ms. Buffett, it's exactly right, and we get into this in the book. There is an element of something different about the way men and women behave that's just too fundamental to be overlooked. We looked at the genetics of confidence, and there is a big genetic component to confidence, but that's not as much gender-driven as simply what the first caller said, JP, about testosterone, for example. I mean, that is a huge driver of what we see as confidence in men, and that is that ability to take risks much more easily. Estrogen, in fact, encourages a kind of consensual behavior and a more drive to calm and negotiate. And so those are both fantastic qualities in the workplace. And I think what everybody's finding now is that the combination of those two things is fantastic. And I think where Caddy and I come down is that, you know, for women, it's not that we want to have 10 times the testosterone level and take the same level of risks that men do, but inching in that direction would make a big difference for us.
So, Caddy, we're not giving up the hope that there can be different roads to succeeding in your career, that women have to change the way they do, that the culture doesn't have to change.
Well, you know, I would like the playing field to be more level, right? I'm sure all of us that have worked in the professional space have come across situations where we felt that the cards were kind of stacked against us, and often they are. But I think, you know, what we are focusing on is something that women can do for themselves to give themselves the opportunity not to hold back without changing their fundamental nature, that this is about taking the next level, going for something that's a little bit hard, whether it's, frankly, in your professional life or in your private life, and not holding back from those difficult things, but still being who you are. Because when you start trying to put on the armor of being brash and having that bravado, it just doesn't work for us.
Young women out there, I'm wondering, is there a generational shift? Are millennial women more confident than we're giving them credit for? You can set us middle-aged women straight at 212-433-WNYC. That's 212-433-9692. I want to go to Ramon in Manhattan. Hi, Ramon.
Hi, how are you?
Good. Go ahead.
Yeah, in fact, it's segueing to this sort of thing. There is a generational gap between the women in the workforce, because both sets of women. In the 1970s, you know, women just revolutionized the workforce by charging in and getting into better positions. So they had no role models to how to team build, how to be leaders, and they mimicked men. And in this case now, women have, like, over the years, have now become team builders and are far more comfortable in their leadership roles than ever. And they build a teamship that's combined with men and women, not just women alone, to get ahead in the corporate world.
What do you guys how do you respond to that?
Well, I think that's exactly right. And I think that what is wonderful, and we really, you know, we did have this wonderful conversation with Christine Lagarde, the head of the IMF, about authenticity. And I think that is at the heart of the sort of confidence that we're talking about. And for women, it is very important now to realize we don't have to use men as our confidence role models. And in fact, we can dig inside of ourselves to find some of the way we want to act and behave as confident human beings. And I think there's a lot more room for that sort of variety in the workplace. But what, you know, one thing Caddy and I were surprised to find, however, is that even though women are succeeding more, that even the younger women, they're not as confident in the workplace as we would have thought. We've had so many young women talk to us about this subject and say, right, I still feel nervous about this or promoting myself, or, you know, after all of their achievements. And so there's still something that I think we can talk about there.
Yeah, I was doing a talk last night, actually, just at GW with a bunch of the women's leadership program in the freshman year, and it was amazing how much they came up to me, these incredibly talented, able young women, and said, you know, I still go into the classroom, and if there's a bunch of guys, I'm more reluctant to raise my hand to ask the professor a question. It's that kind of thing that we're saying that we need to overcome.
I'm Anoush Zomorodi, sitting in for Brian Lehrer on WNYC, and my guests are the authors of The Confidence Code, The Science and Art of Self-Assurance, What Women Should Know, Claire Shipman and Kati Kay. And we're going to go to Dee in Queens. Hi, Dee.
Hi.
Hey, go ahead.
Well, my point is this. When we are too confident, we are the B word. When men make mistakes, they're learning. When we make mistakes, we're incompetent. You know, and then this is the mixed messages we're getting, and I keep hitting that glass ceiling. I mean, I'm almost 50, but I have promoted myself shamelessly sometimes, and I've received the wrath of I don't know who, but you know, just a lot of bad things have happened as a result of me trying to push myself by saying that I know I can do these things.
I mean, that I think is a key question: is women who are being confident, and yet they're not reaping the rewards.
You know, there's no question that, as Kati said earlier, we're not playing on a level playing field, and by no means are we suggesting in this book that, hey, it's all on women. If only we were a little bit more confident, everything would be great, because the fact is, it's not. Women are often viewed differently for the same behavior in the workplace. We do suffer from something called stereotype threat, which is, you know, you're in a minority, and that minority is thought to have certain attributes, and it affects your performance and your confidence. There's just no question about that. I think the thing that gives us a bit of hope on that front and what behavior is seen as acceptable for women in the workplace, and unfortunately women of our generation, and may have had to be pioneers here, and the callers too, but is that there are a number of studies that now show that, in fact, women are the best leaders when it comes to balancing the best attributes of men and women. The most powerful leaders now are people who seem to be able to combine these, sort of being decisive with being a good listener, being a conciliator with being, you know, a risk taker, and that women are the ones who are best able to walk that tightrope. So, you know,
so in terms of giving Dee some tips, what would you tell her to do the next time she goes in and is like, no, I deserve a raise or a promotion or that tough project?
I think some of it is this, what we were talking about a little bit earlier, Manoush, this idea of authenticity. I mean, Dee is quite right. Of course, there are tons of studies out there that show that when women behave like men, they do get penalized for it. Not, by the way, just by men, but by other women as well. That's what's kind of really alarming. But Claire's right, that Stanford study also suggests that things are changing, that there's a recognition that women who can combine what are called male attributes with their own female attributes are the ones actually that are the superstars. They're the ones that do very best. And I think the key for Dee is to think, what feels authentic to me? Because I think when women go into a pay negotiation situation or a promotion situation, acting in a way that is not inherently natural to them or comfortable to them, we pick it up. I mean, it's amazing how much all of the psychologists we spoke to told us we pick up false confidence. If you're putting on armor, you're never really going to feel comfortable. So you have to be able to do these things in a way that is comfortable to us, which is, if you are naturally somebody that doesn't go in and bang the table and stamps their foot and makes demands, then trying to do that isn't going to work for you. Now, that doesn't mean that you shouldn't raise your hand, ask for the promotion, ask for the pay raise. You just have to find a way to do it that fits with who you are.
Let's go to Fred in Manhattan. Hi, Fred.
Hi. Hello.
Hello.
It's also a big part of it is nurture. I mean, right now, I have a total role reversal in my house, whereas my wife is making the money. I'm at home with the kids. I've got a 5-year-old and a 2-year-old,
good
a little
for you,
girl,
man.
And a little boy. I'm sorry?
Good for you, man.
Thank you. So, you know, I want to raise my little girl to be, you know, feminine and tough, because I know what's out there in the real world. But there are differences. You know, she wants purses. She wants to be a princess, and she's not getting that from me. And how I think that translates into the workforce is that, whereas guys, you know, when we grow up, You know, we'll say, you know, how's your day from your boss? Oh, it's a little family problems. Don't care. You know, you're taught. When someone asks, how's it going? It's great, even if it's falling apart. You know, you learn that from an early age. Women aren't really taught that. So, we're taught to be, men are taught to be comfortable with this outer skin. And it's really, like your guest said, you can't just show up to work one day and then be the person that pounds the table and says, this is the idea, I don't agree with that. It has to be something that, you know, you're infused with at an early age. And that's where I see the differences in the playgrounds. Because I will see, I mean, there's more mothers out there than dads. That's just how it is. And, you know, they're all great. But I notice a lot of times that they'll push their son to climb. They'll push their son to run and play and be rough. But the little girl should stay near and play with the dolls. You know, you see more parents trying to get their girls to climb, but more often than not, it's the boys that have the confidence to do what they want. And when a girl even tries to do the same thing and they let them, the parent is right there next to them. And that's kind of giving them a message that, you know, you have to be careful all the time. You can't just let it go. You can't just go for it. And I it's getting better, but it has a way to go because I see this next generation of girls growing up with limitations that are implanted there by their parents who are very well-meaning.
You know, it's funny. My producer was just saying that we've heard people say this before, and it's always the dads that notice that.
Yeah.
And I certainly really relate to that idea that that you have to say it in a way that you feel comfortable with. Is it just honesty? Are women more honest? Because if I go in there and I'm like, well, I think I should deserve this, and then I kind of have to laugh at myself. I feel like there's just more self-reflection, kind of.
You know, I think it's true that you have to be authentic. I think the trick is, there's so many things I want to answer because I think the caller is so not into that
Raise
Your Girl,
definitely.
Too. But I do think that leads to the same place, which is nurturing an early sense of bravery and an ability to, you know, confidence and an ability to stick up for yourself. And whether you're going to do it, you know, in a loud way or a quiet way, whether you're going to write it, whether you're going to say it, you know, that's something that the authenticity is about. But what you want to implant is those seeds of confidence and that a little bit of that thick skin. It's something we heard Hillary Clinton talk about this week and last week about dropping the perfectionism, needing to thicken our hides. And with kids, what we have found is that, you know, sports is critical for girls. And we got to not just let them start when they're 5-year-old playing the soccer like everybody does or, you know, whatever they take up. They need to stick with it because they're dropping out still in much higher rates than the boys are when they hit puberty. Sports is just a great proving ground for confidence because you learn to fail over and over. And I agree with you. Man, I have a tomboy 8-year-old daughter, and it wasn't until I was writing this book, and I always loved that about her, but man, she's hard, and she doesn't want to please people, and she's just so not your typical girl. And that was so hard for me because I kept thinking, what, you know, is this embarrassing? She's not combing her hair. We're going here. We're going there. And I realized, wow, okay, I need to just embrace this. Mm-hmm. And it's interesting. It's a real journey, I think, for women as parents to realize we cannot push perfectionism in our daughters. We got to let them
and
fail.
And back with the boys, I have a sweet, emotional little guy at home, and I have to let him be that. If he doesn't
exactly
want to roll and tumble after school, that's okay. Let's go to Jessica in Manhattan. Hi, Jessica.
Hi, good morning. I just wanted to add something. I mean, I was raised with two older brothers. I was the only girl, and I was the youngest, and it was, I had to fight. And I kind of had that inherent need to be equal to my brothers. So if I was called pretty, I didn't want that. I needed to be called sharp. You know, sharp was the word. My brothers were called that. I wanted to be called that. And I had really great parents who were able to, you know, really listen to me and really understand that I didn't want the girly things. I wanted to go where my brothers were going. And I think that really served me well growing up, is that I have that confidence. That confidence is there. And there's no gender difference. I think it's the way you're raised and the way that, you know, the choices that you make get reinforced and get supported. And even if they're wrong choices, you can still own them and, you know, be confident in that, I think.
Well, what do you think, lady? Should your next book be a parenting book? Is that what we're talking about here?
Well, you know, I think there is something about men's ability to let criticisms fall off them and let slights or things they've done wrong or things other people have said to them slip away from them in the way that women just don't seem to be able to do. And I do think that can go back to the schoolyard. You know, boy, you hear boys all the time calling each other loser or you suck or whatever it is. And my, you know, I hear my boys saying it all the time when they were little in the playground. And you never hear the girls saying that. And, you know, thank God, because it's not very nice language. But in a way, they learn to shrug it off. I mean, I speak to my husband and he comes back from work and, you know, he's had a row with his boss. And so the next day I'm asking him, so, you know, how's it going with John? Is it all okay? And he's like, what? What do you mean?
He's moved on.
He's moved on. And I'm still worried about it.
Lorraine in Spring Lake, New Jersey has a very interesting question. Lorraine, you there? Lorraine, are you there?
Yes, I am.
Go ahead.
So this has been a very exciting show to listen to. And it took me a generation, I'm in my 50s, to learn what you're all talking about, instilling in, and I think it's our job to instill in the next generation. I have a daughter. I'm a single mom. And instilling that confidence in them, a teenager who has really not a lot of confidence but a lot of talents and a lot of attributes that they need to identify and fly with. I remember when I switched careers about almost 20 years ago, the person interviewing me said, well, what makes you think you have the skills for this job? And do you feel like you're qualified? And I was so angry at him that he said that. I looked him in the face and I said, well, what I don't know, I will learn and I will perform. And I'm paid on a commission basis. So that was a motivating factor, of course, in me stepping up to the plate. It was a little bit different than salary, the way it was structured. But I remember that moment distinctively. And this, you know, my vice president looked me in the face, and he wasn't going to give me the job. But I ended up getting at it, and I've been doing it for 20 years and performing. And I think that, you know, my mother instilled certain things in me, but I'm from a totally different generation, and that it's now, you know, our job to instill in the next, be it a college student that works for me in my office that doesn't have the confidence to step up and stand up for herself, but the skills and the knowledge is there. But I firmly believe that it's almost like fake it till you make it. And if you don't know something, learn it. Because then when you get to that next level, it will become second nature to you.
Lorraine, I think you make a great point that there's nothing like working on commission or having to pay the bills to make that fear go away. But just to close, I want to ask Claire and Kati, if you could give one tip after the show is over that somebody can go out and do to sort of either bring confidence to the women in their lives or women that they could potentially bring to themselves, like just something easy. Give it to us.
For me, it would be act more. Think less and act more. That we need to stop whizzing around our own heads and actually take action, because it's when you act, when you do things, when you go outside your comfort zone, try something a little bit hard. You may fail sometimes, but that's the way you build your confidence.
And I think mine is somewhat related, but it's this notion of fail fast. It's a techie buzz phrase, but it's all about embracing failure as success. These days, it is part of success. If you're not failing, you're not learning anything important, and women need to get their heads around that. And by the way, God, our last caller was brilliant, super confident, so bravo to her.
We have to leave it there. Claire Shipman and Kati Kay, authors of The Confidence Code, The Science and Art of Self-Assurance, What Women Should Know. Thank you both so much for being on The Brian Lehrer Show.
Thanks, Manoush.
Thanks, Manoush.
I'm Manoush Zomorodi, sitting in for Brian Lehrer on WNYC, and I am now going to confidently invite you to join me at an event I'm hosting at May 13th here at WNYC in the Green Space. It's about robots and artificial intelligence. It's going to be fun. It's going to be educational, a little wacky. It's May 13th. Get your tickets at WNYC.org/thegreenspace.